Okay, let's unpack this. We are diving into a topic that, well, it seems fundamentally distorted by perception, especially for anyone who owns land. The safety of hunting.
Yeah, it really is. It's a huge barrier for landowners, isn't it? People who might otherwise want to, generate some revenue. But they're held back by this deep-seated belief, often pretty emotional, that leasing their property to hunters is just, well, too risky. The liability seems enormous.
It's that immediate reaction, isn't it? Weapons equal danger, full stop.
Exactly. It's this visceral thing.
And that emotional fear is what we're trying to challenge today. Our mission really is to analyze sources, specifically ones focused on land leasing, risk management, that show this common idea is maybe a false impression. We want to show you why, statistically, hunting, when it's managed properly, is often far safer than a lot of common outdoor activities people, frankly, don't think twice about.
Yeah, the goal is peace of mind through, knowledge. We're going to compare injury rates, pinpoint the actual specific dangers, which can be surprising, and really critically for landowners, look at how liability isn't just managed, but kind of neutralized through specialized insurance.
Okay, let's start with the data then, because the core idea from the sources is, well, it's powerfully counterintuitive. Hunting isn't significantly more dangerous than other common outdoor activities.
Not at all. And in fact, things like mandatory education, safety protocols, they actually push hunting's risk profile below many mainstream sports.
It's fascinating how skewed public perception gets when firearms are involved, right? Regardless of the actual numbers.
Totally. The emotional reaction often overrides the data.
So here's where it gets really interesting. We looked at statistical comparisons reported by organizations like Basecamp Leasing, citing data that's been, cross-referenced using public sources, large data aggregators.
And the contrast is stark. It provides that real aha moment.
It does. Hunting's injury rate is so remarkably low, especially fatalities, that when you ask, say, large AI tools for a consistent rate per 1,000 hours, they often just, they can't give a number. They say the odds are extremely low or negligible.
Think about that. An activity people label inherently dangerous has a near zero statistically negligible rate reported like that. Now, compare that to things we think are totally normal recreation, sports where injuries are almost expected, part of the game.
Wait, hang on. So we're comparing an activity with firearms, where you often need mandatory training, which has negligible reporting, to something like, what, baseball?
Precisely. Let's just run through some comparisons that really defy expectations. And remember, these other sports, they routinely send people to the ER.
Okay. Lay it out for us.
Right. Take baseball or softball. That sees approximately 0.057 injuries per 100 player hours. So if you play a lot, your risk adds up pretty quickly. Basketball, significantly higher. We're talking about 6 to 14 injuries per 1,000 player hours.
Wow, that's orders of magnitude higher than typical hunting incident rates.
It is many magnitudes higher.
And what about just everyday stuff like activities that rely on equipment?
Well, cycling is a big one people often overlook in terms of risk. It reports around 163 injuries per 100,000 people.
163 per 100,000, okay.
In skiing, if you hit the slopes, roughly 600,000 people end up injured annually in the U.S. alone.
600,000.
Yeah, that's a huge, easily counted number of ER visits every year for just one recreational sport.
That really shifts the perspective, doesn't it? Especially if you're considering leasing land. The risk you might accept from a properly trained hunter is statistically lower than, say, sending your kid to baseball practice.
Absolutely. And the list keeps going when you compare hunting to other, maybe more specialized, but still common hobbies, like indoor climbing.
Oh, yeah, that seems pretty controlled.
Seems safe, structured, right. But it still sees about 0.01 to 0.03 injuries per 1,000 hours of climbing.
Okay, still quantifiable.
Still quantifiable. And what about something totally different, like just taking a vacation?
Taking a vacation.
Even traveling, just being on a trip. About 5% of travelers experience some kind of serious injury or illness that needs intervention.
5%.
And scuba diving, that's around 35 injuries per 10,000 divers and one fatality per 200,000 dives.
So when you stack these up, activities with risk profiles higher or more measurable than hunting, it really does start to dismantle that emotional fear landowners might have about leasing.
Exactly. It puts it in context.
And drilling down specifically to that land lease angle, the sources also point out the sports that really rack up the ER visits.
Yeah, the top five, according to the data, are ATVs, first and foremost. Then baseball and softball, football, basketball, and cycling.
So the activities woven into, you know, the fabric of everyday life, those are statistically the primary sources of recreational injury, not the highly regulated education-driven activity of hunting.
That statistical overview, it does provide some profound peace of mind, I think. But, you know, we have to be fair. Danger does still exist in hunting, even if the odds are low.
Right. It's not zero risk.
No. So if most accidents aren't actually from mishandled firearms like people assume, what are the real primary sources of injury we should know about?
Well, what's encouraging, as you mentioned, is that hunting-related accidents are generally declining. That's largely thanks to those mandatory courses and regulations.
Uh-huh.
But the sources are pretty clear on the top three causes of injury.
And they are. Number one, falls from tree stands.
Falls.
Falls. Number two, weapons accidents and mishandling firearms, still there, but not number one. And three, misidentifying targets.
Wait. Falls from tree stands are number one. I mean, wouldn't you just assume firearms accidents would top that list? That seems to be the core public fear.
And that's the crucial distinction. That's what mandatory education has changed. Accidents from, you know, ballistic mistakes, unintended discharge, not using safety mechanisms, those have been drastically cut by required training.
Okay. Today, the leading cause of serious injury is often just gravity and the structure itself. Improperly installing a stand, climbing it wrong, or issues coming down.
So the primary risks have shifted. It's less about the weapon itself and more about the environment and the hunter's actions within it.
Precisely.
Actions that can be mitigated with pretty simple, low-cost gear.
Exactly right. The fact that the most common injury is related to not using a harness or a safety line, it just highlights these are often preventable mechanical failures, not some kind of chaotic, unpredictable weapon event.
Okay. So if those are the known dangers, let's pivot hard to prevention. What do hunters and landowners need to require to really reduce or even remove those risks? Because this is what helps a landowner feel secure enough to actually sign a lease.
Well, it starts and it ends with education. Hunters must have completed the courses, practice excellent firearm safety. No. That's just, it's non-negotiable. It's the baseline for cutting risk.
Got it. Education first. Then, beyond the weapons themselves, you need specific gear and just diligence.
Mm-hmm.
Like wearing blaze orange for visibility, absolutely essential.
Mm-hmm.
And using key safety equipment. Safety harnesses, safety lines, linemen's belts, especially for those tree stands we just talked about.
Right, tackling the number one cause directly.
Exactly. And just being diligent in the field is huge. Properly identifying your target before shooting, making absolutely sure it's game, not another person.
Mm.
Watching out for dangerous terrain, being mindful of wildlife encounters.
Makes sense.
Carrying emergency supplies, and crucially, sharing hunt plans. Letting someone know where you are and when you expect to be back.
Okay.
You combine all those measures. That's precisely why the risk profile ends up so low compared to, say, a pickup basketball game where basically zero safety standards apply.
Right. Okay, now let's get really practical with the liability piece. Why does all this safety data matter so specifically when a landowner is thinking about leasing out vacant property?
Ah, this is the key, right? This is the foundation for getting over that fear that stops landowners from using their asset.
Yeah.
By cutting down the perceived liability fear with actual data, we can then introduce the formal solution, liability insurance. Specifically, policies designed for vacant land and hunting leases.
Okay, so how exactly does that insurance work? How does it protect everyone involved?
It's really the ultimate safety net. It protects both sides, the lessors, who are the landowners, and the lessees, the hunters. It shields them from potential liability claims arising from bodily injury or property damage.
Okay.
But crucially, the policy specifically covers claims that allege injury or damage happened due to the landowner's negligence. It's protection against that unexpected legal claim that might pop up just because you're on the ground.
That's an important distinction, landowner negligence. And what kinds of people on the property does the policy protect the landowner against? Because that's often where the fear lies, right? What if a total stranger gets hurt on my land?
Yeah, good question. The sources break it down into three main types of visitors. And the policy generally covers claims related to all three. First, you have invitees.
Invitees? Like who?
People invited onto the property for the landowner's benefit. Think like a contractor coming to do work, a service provider.
Okay, makes sense.
Then you have licensees. These are people invited, but more for their own recreation or amusement. This is typically where your paying hunters would fall.
Right, your lessees.
Exactly. And finally, the category that causes the most anxiety, the trespasser.
Okay, the trespasser. Why would a landowner even be liable for someone who's there without permission? That seems unfair.
Well, that's the core legal worry, isn't it? Even if someone is trespassing, basic laws usually say the landowner can't intentionally harm them or set, traps.
Right.
And in some places, if there's a known hazard the landowner hasn't addressed, they might still face some legal exposure, even from a trespasser's injury.
Wow.
So this vacant land liability insurance offers that peace of mind. It protects your assets, covers legal defense costs against claims from all three groups, invitees, licensees, even trespassers, no matter how, well, absurd the claim might seem on its face.
Okay, so what does this mean practically for someone actually getting a policy? Give us the specifics, the tangible details from the sources about cost, coverage, the stuff that might finally convince a nervous landowner this is a worthwhile investment.
Okay, the costs are usually pretty straightforward, designed to be budget-friendly. They often follow a simple formula, something like 30 to 30 cents per acre.
30 cents an acre.
Yeah, often with a minimum premium, say around $225.
Yeah.
When you think about the level of protection it provides, that minimum fee is, frankly, a remarkable deal.
That does sound very reasonable. And beyond just the cost, what specific features of these policies are really designed to immediately calm a landowner's fears?
The sources point out several key benefits built for speed and protection, like next day coverage is common.
So quick turnaround?
Very quick. Mm-hmm. You can secure the policy almost immediately and move forward with a lease. A huge benefit is often a zero deductible.
Zero deductible? Explain that.
It means if a covered claim is filed, the policyholder, the landowner, or lessee, depending on the policy structure, doesn't have to pay anything out of pocket before the insurance money kicks in to cover legal fees or settlement.
Okay, that is huge. That means immediate financial relief if a legal issue pops up. No initial hit.
Exactly. And what about minimizing the chance of a claim in the first place?
Good point. Does the insurance help there too?
Well, indirectly.
Yeah.
Many providers also include things like a custom-created, attorney-approved liability waiver that can be built right into the lease agreement itself.
Okay.
So that waiver acts as a primary contractual layer of defense. It makes sure the lessee has formally acknowledged the risks involved.
Smart.
And just for practical purposes, the necessary insurance certificate is usually emailed immediately upon purchase. So there's no delay in getting the lease signed and finalized.
Okay. So fast coverage, zero deductible, help with waivers, instant proof. It sounds pretty comprehensive.
It really is designed to make it easy.
And there was a quick administrative note in the sources too. Something about cancellation.
Yes. Just that if the policy is canceled midterm by the policyholder, there's typically no refund of the premium paid. Standard practice for many insurance types.
Got it. But overall, the structure sounds like it's built to quickly, efficiently secure protection. It turns what feels like a high-stakes gamble into just a simple, manageable operational cost.
That's exactly it. It's really the final piece of the puzzle in turning that anxiety into potential revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You take the statistical data that lowers the perceived risk,
right.
You pair it with rigorous hunter safety practices,
mm-hmm.
and then you guarantee protection with this specialized liability insurance.
Okay, so let's recap the key takeaway for you, the listener. Hunting statistically is much safer than the general public, and probably many landowners perceive it to be.
Yeah.
It's often safer than common, totally unregulated activities like basketball or cycling, which means the underlying fear of liability. It's largely unfounded, provided hunters are following those mandatory education standards and safety protocols.
The connection is really clear. Knowledge, so knowing the low accident data, combined with preparation safety gear, insurance that translates directly into peace of mind. For everyone involved in a hunting lease, it lets owners move forward confidently.
Absolutely. And as we close out, here's a final provocative thought for you to mull over. We've talked a lot about how mandatory education and safety regulations are key to hunting's declining accident rates.
Right.
So how much further could accident rates drop, and how much liability exposure could be reduced if those really high injury amateur sports like baseball, softball, basketball, what if they adopted similarly rigorous, maybe even legally mandated safety education requirements for all participants, not just the pros?
That's a fascinating question. What would Little League look like with mandatory safety briefings and certification?
Okay.
Interesting thought. Well, we'll see you on the next deep dive.